You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Will Out Radio. Today's date is Friday, the 30th of November, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and we're broadcasting live at RadioAryan.com because we've got the producer of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic Victors of World War II with us, Mr. Dennis Wise, producer extraordinaire. Dennis, how you doing?
Well, that's me, panic buttons again, as usual, but we've managed to get through some kind of a show, I think, tonight. I'm all right. I've had an enjoyable interview on Tuesday with the Nordic boys up there in Northern Europe, and it was interesting. I really enjoyed it.
I thought it was a particularly good interview, actually, Dennis. I thought it was probably one of your best interviews, particularly the first hour. You know, it was really interesting to hear about.
Well, that's weird.
Yeah, it's just, you know, people have curiosities and they think, well, how did Dennis get into this? You know, what does his family think of this? You know, all that sort of thing you were talking about, which was, it was really good. I thought it was a great interview. I do recommend people check it out. That's, The Nordic Frontier. And also just check out their podcast anyway, because it's a brilliant podcast. It really is a good podcast. They have a lot of insight and a very good dry sense of humor as well, which I do appreciate.
Yeah,
they're pretty clever as well, you know, pretty high IQ lads.
Well, I was impressed by the amount of people they knew that actually had watched the documentary and been moved enough to even become National Socialists. Really impressed with that one.
Well, it brought a lot back to me. You know, you're saying about how emotional parts of it are, and they really are emotional. You know, I mean, it brings tears to your eyes watching parts of it. And it is life-changing as well when you find all that out.
Yeah.
So many people. You know,
it really is.
You suddenly realise the truth. And a lot of the time people do have to make some serious changes to their lives because they may have been, you know, a liberal before then or an anti-racist or an anti-Nazi, and then they realise that they've been wrong. And it takes a lot of courage to admit that you're wrong and make changes.
And that's definitely, I think that's been one of the main problems. People can't believe just how taken in they were. But, you know, truth always hurts, doesn't it?
Well, that's what we say, truth will out. The truth will always come out in the end. And it really has come out in the last 5 years, I think, with the help of the internet, the truth about nationalism, and particularly National Socialism, which is obviously the central point of your first documentary there. Well, we've got comments and questions from the channel. And these are ones that you've picked yourself, Dennis, aren't they? They're from, all over the place, I think.
Yeah, from all over the place, yeah. But there's a different, different points of view from each one.
Yeah, and it's not just from your most recent video, is it?
No, so one or two which were a while back, but I thought we could even address now.
Well, yeah, if people do add comments there or add questions, you know, we do go through them. And we'll put them on this show, and then I can ask Dennis them. So, you know, even if people leave comments on the Truthful Out Radio podcast, or if they leave them at your channel, Dennis, on your videos, you know, usually the most recent one, but I'll go through them, or I know you go through them and answer them anyway, but I'll go through them again and pull out stuff that hasn't actually been answered, and then we can go through it in this show. I mean, that's what this show is about, really, is background information to everything that you've put on your videos.
Well, as I found out something interesting this week, by the way, manipulation of YouTube. There's a comment that I left on a certain video who was half praising the documentary of mine, but saying that it was too pro-Nazi. He didn't understand that I'd had 70 years to combat. So, you know, I could only do it as I felt. But I left a comment on his page. But when I went on with Firefox, unless it was Google. But when I went to with Firefox, no comment.
Yeah, I think they're doing lots of dirty tricks in the background there. You know, on my Twitter account, I've had 1,800 followers for the last 2 years, and it fluctuates around that. But I get, yeah, you know, 3 or 4 new followers a day, but it just doesn't change. Yeah. The count doesn't change. And I've got the Twitter account blocked off at the moment, but I was shadow banned as well. The tweets that I was sending out weren't turning up in the main Twitter feed. So they were only turning up to my followers. So that's one thing that they do. But also in Google, they manipulate the search results, and they've admitted doing that. They've said this is one of the ways they're going to attack fake news, because they call us fake news. They've said what we'll do is we'll bump real news to the top of the search results, which means that they'll bump up the Independent, BBC, CNN, all that sort of thing, and they'll hide our results, the nationalist results. Even websites that are really popular, they'll hide them so that people don't see them.
Well, what I did the other week, actually, I actually spelt a search wrong. And it took me to the actual place I wanted to be. When I spelt it right, it didn't.
Well, it used to be that if you typed in Holocaust, you would get Stormfront, and you would get a thread on Stormfront. Was the Holocaust real or not, or something like that? And that was the most looked at page to do with the Holocaust. And they removed it, even though it was the most looked at page, because they said, well, the internet's supposed to be democratic. It's whatever most people want to look at will be at the top of the search rankings. But when they realized that what most people want to look at isn't politically correct, they had to change it all. So it's rigged, basically, just like the elections. Yeah.
So is democracy.
We shouldn't really expect them to treat us any differently on the internet, I guess.
Not at all.
Right. Well, the first one of these questions that we've got today comes from somebody called White Power. Great name there. And he says, sorry to comment twice, but I forgot to say something. The falsely so-called Pope wears an ancient Babylonian priest of Baal head garment shaped like the open mouth of a fish. On the head garment of falsely so-called Pope is written in Latin, Vicar of Christ, which sounds all well and good and everything, except that in Latin, the letters are also numerals, which when added up comes to 666. It's the truth. Look it up for yourself. Not to mention that Christ said to call no one on earth Father, that you have one Father, God. Pope in Latin means Father, so he insists on being called Father or Pope, even though Christ himself said not to call anyone on earth Father. So what it boils down to is the falsely so-called Pope is one of the heads of the hook-nosed beast system spoken of in the book of Revelation. So there's quite a lot there that we can get into. But first of all, really, sort of, what are your views on the Pope then, Dennis? What do you think of him?
Well, I actually answered this why with
actually the
why
office.
Why would they need to influence?
Think of the office rather than Pope Francis. What do you think of the actual office of the Pope, the position of Pope?
I've never had a problem with myself, as probably 1 billion Catholics haven't, and these people. Usually, who don't like, you know, the Catholic Church, who come out with these things. And I'm not saying they're not true or not, but all I'm saying is the sincerity of a Catholic, he is a genuine Christian who believes in Christ. Now, whether the Church at some stage has been, you know, manipulated, I don't know. But, you know, there's not a lot I can do about that anyway, you know what I mean? I believe what I've been taught, and that's the end of that. But I actually asked him, well, why was the need to infiltrate with Freemasonry then, if it were in such a state? And he went on to explain that, you know, the Jews were never Freemasons really, and they infiltrated everything anyway. But, I mean, he may have a point, I don't know, but the fact is that genuine followers of the Catholic Church are genuine Christians, they really are.
Well, the Pope's supposed to be the representative of Christ on earth, isn't he? That's why they say Vicar of Christ. He's supposed to be the head of the organisation.
Yeah,
Peter
the first one, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really think you can complain about there being a head of an organisation. He's supposed to be the final arbitrator on things. And from what I can see of it, you could appeal to the Pope. When everybody was Catholic, all these countries were Catholic, if you had a disagreement with the king, you could take it to the Pope as an independent arbitrator that was outside of the sovereignty of the country that you were in. And he could decide on something based on what it said in the Bible. And he was limited by what it said in the Bible. So I can see that it could have been positive in ways like that. I mean, if you look at the equivalent today, you've got the EU and you've got the UN, which are supranational organizations, which don't have to obey the strict writ of the Bible. They can make it up as they go along. They've got no real authority, and they've sort of superseded the Pope, as it were, and his role in the Catholic Church. That's sort of the way that I see it. And obviously you got, got bad popes as well as good ones.
We have one now, haven't we? Like,
yeah.
The thing is that, you know, they've always, to me anyway, they've been the only bloc on Freemasonry over the centuries. They're the only ones really who've, even when, you know, there were many Catholic countries and like the whole Roman Empire was ruling, was nothing near as satanic as what we got today. So people can call it satanic, but it was, you know, I mean, I'm pretty sure genderism and all that would never come into play if it were one.
Well, yeah, I dare say, you know, they haven't got everything right. Man is fallible. But it was the Catholic Church. There was one church for everyone from the first century
until about... Split.
Yeah, until the 10th century, really, when there was the split into Eastern Orthodox and Roman Catholic. Yeah. It was just the one church, and, you know, what they meant by universal was that it was the same thing that was being taught in one country as taught in the other, and that's why it was in Latin. So it was all in the same language. So they could say, didn't matter if you're in Romania, didn't matter if you're in Britain or France, it's in Latin, it's all being said exactly the same. That was the universal bit of it. And that's why one of the reasons why they didn't really want to translate it into English. There's two sides to every story. And I do think people tend to be very anti-Catholic sometimes. And it's not always...
Was it a lot of propaganda in there?
It's not always just... It's not always right. Yeah, there is a lot of anti-Catholic propaganda. And when you think about it, some of the best researchers into all of this are Catholic. E. Michael Jones, Michael Hoffman.
Yeah.
And there aren't really any Protestant ones. There are Christian identity researchers and scholars. But as far as Protestantism is concerned, there really aren't that many that really go in depth. Is it Pastor Anderson? Stephen Anderson, is that his name?
Yeah.
But I can't really think of many others, and he's not really a scholar. And you got Bishop Williamson and various other Polish bishops. When you look at Protestantism, it doesn't really match up to Catholicism or the Eastern Orthodox as far as standing for tradition and rejecting degeneracy and immorality. And I think you really woken a lot of people up to the positive side of the Catholic Church with your most recent.
Well, the deeds that they did during the end of World War II, I'm forever grateful for them. And I always mention it, but what can I say? They saved thousands.
Yeah, and that's been a real surprise for a lot of people to hear the Church's involvement in that. Well, let's move on to the next comment we've got here. We've got somebody called Jack Wallace. He says, "Hi, Dennis. In your last documentary, Communism by the Back Door, you mentioned something called the Secret of the Mysteries or something along those lines. I'm quite intrigued by this and I've tried searching on the internet but can't find much about it. Is there anywhere you know of to read more about this?" So what are you referring to there, Dennis, the Secret of the Mysteries?
Well, I did in Communism by the Back Door, where the elite schools are taught about the mysteries, but the ordinary school isn't. And that goes all the way back to Plato. And so, consequently, they've got this knowledge that other ordinary people haven't, and they use it to their advantage. And sometimes that advantage is not for the good. And, you know, there's not a lot on the internet. I did answer this one. I said, I'll have a look back in the research, and there's one or two things that I'm pretty sure there are about it. And that reminded me then about Manly Piol, because what he's saying there is that the Mysteries was actually, you know, the worshipping of Lucifer and the power that you can get by the worshipping of Lucifer, which is what the original party in Communism by the Back Door was all about. And Manly P. Hall, one of the, probably the leading Freemason, in The Secret Teachings of All Ages, his book, actually shows you how to conjure Lucifer up if you're that crazy.
So the Mysteries, what you're referring to there are the mystery religions, isn't it? It used to be the Gnostic.
Yeah, that's right.
Gnostic stuff, the Gnostic religions, and that's now Freemasonry claims to have continued it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the Greeks had it.
Alternate God.
Yeah, the Greeks had the Eleusinian Mysteries, I think it was called. And then I think that was tied
in.
Go on.
Yeah, I think Plato went to Egypt or wherever, Babylon, wherever it were, to learn, and then came back and opened up a school. I think it was Plato anyway. And all the famous Greek scholars all attended there and passed it on even to Alexander the Great, I believe. There's some bit of controversy over it, but they reckon in the part where I actually did, the guy talking said that to conquer the armies that he did with the amount of soldiers he had, and there was evidence that he had been taught the mysteries in a book still available today, he was leaning towards the fact that Alexander the Great knew the power of the mysteries, which was the cult.
Yeah, I think it was tied in with the Bacchanalian rites, orgies and drunkenness and psychedelic plants and heightened states of being, all that sort of thing. I think that was involved in it as well. I remember that story of somebody going off to experience them and then writing them up. I mean, it may have been Plato. But this is sort of continued on today with Freemasonry and the New Age and the resurgence of witchcraft and all that sort of thing. It's all,
In that part, it shows the massive pillars which the Greeks had, you know, to actually make these buildings. And then it showed the pyramids and the large, it's so gigantic, it's unbelievable to think that at that time they could build such buildings. And this guy was saying again, this was all from the mystery teachings.
So it could be that they were given the measurements and the ideas of how to build these things from supernatural sources, possibly.
That's what they were suggesting, yeah.
Cyclopean masonry, I think they call it. I mean, you look at those buildings and you just think, well, how could they have built them years ago? We'd have problems building them now.
Moving them, never mind building them.
Where did the idea come from? Yeah. You know, we had cranes. We got cranes and all sorts today to
still come. Yeah, you still couldn't do it
to build them. You look at the size of some of the pillars. Yeah, it's definitely mysteries of how they did a lot of things in the ancient world. Could have been supernatural.
That's right.
Well, the next one's Alex D. He says, can you cite the source of Harold Icke's letter to Roosevelt? This seems too incredulous to me. So you better give us a bit of background to this, Dennis. What's he talking about here? Who's Harold Icke's and what was the letter, Harold Icke's letter to Roosevelt about?
Well, can I just say, I tried to download it tonight. I mean, it was there at one point, and then all of a sudden it's not there, so I don't know what's going on there. But I have the details anyway. So what it was, when the preemptive strike against Stalin kicked off and the invasion of the Soviet Union, there was a letter in a PDF form, actually, which was sent from Harold Icke, who was the US Interior Secretary. And this is on June 23rd, 1941, and he wrote a memo to the Freemason President Roosevelt. And in it, he said, there will never be so good a time to stop the shipment of oil to Japan as we now have. There might develop from the embargoing of oil such a situation as would make it not only possible, but easy to get into this war in an effective way. As we should thus indirectly be brought in, we would avoid the criticism that we had gone in as an ally of communistic Russia. So obviously they're looking at it as a good way of getting in, because people would have wondered, and still do wonder, why they sided with Russia.
So this was something to do with Pearl Harbor. They were trying to find an excuse to get into the war,
yes,
without looking as if they were helping out the Soviets.
That's right, yeah. So never will be so good a time to stop shipments of oil to Japan as we now have.
Right, right. What was the actual source then of this letter?
Well,
it's a website.
Well, it was a letter. No, it was a letter. All the official stamping and everything to Roosevelt, an official, you know, presidential type letter. And the guy asked for a source because he didn't believe it, or he couldn't believe it. And then when I showed him, gave him a link to it, he come back and said what a wonderful researcher I was, which was kind of it.
And then the link disappeared.
Well, it did tonight. Yeah, it was there early on because I double checked. And then when I went to download it, it weren't there.
Somebody must have spotted it and thought, we don't want that being easily available. It must have been in the archives then.
It was, yeah.
It must have been in the archives. Okay, well, the next one is, this is an interesting name, Baal the Kebab Remover. And he says, I'm sorry to break this down to you, but it seems we are only losing. The amount of commie whores who are legit either Marxists or Leninists is astonishing. Most of them seriously think that Stalin did not make famine, intended or not, and that the USSR did not suffer much under him, while they never even lived there or have zero knowledge in economics. And yet there are retards on lefty poll who think that North Korea is secretly a utopia and that China is socialistic, despite the fact they now have a capitalistic system which they created, because without it, they would have simply collapsed. None of them do real scientific study of human nature and economics, but just fill their heads with useless BS ideologies. Even your work has been debunked, and no debunk of the debunk was made. I just give up and feel like all hope is lost. Prove me wrong. Well, I would just say, I would just say that isn't this week the anniversary of the Holodomor, the man-made famine in Ukraine? I think it is.
Does anybody know about it?
I think it is. Or this is this week they have a memorial for it, for the Holodomor. I've seen some memes pointing towards that, and there wasn't just one famine. There was more than one. I think there was two or three famines, and it was so bad that people were eating children. And there's pictures of it, isn't there? I mean, you've got some of the pictures in your film, I think, Dennis, in your documentary.
Yeah, I actually come across some film of them, actually, real rare film, Raid in the Ages, but it was too late to put in the documentary. But yeah, I've received a couple of these lately because I think a lot of people are there realizing the desperate situation we are in because we lost World War II, and there ain't a lot you can do about it because the only armies what fought them were now defeated, and you know the consequences lays where the hat falls, so to speak. So I can understand where it's coming from. This thing about my work's been debunked and not been rebunked, if you like. Well, I said to him, I said, can you show me where this is? Because I've had attempts of it being debunked. And I've all shot them down. And this is news to me. I mean, one guy has a complete page up on one of these, like a blog type of thing. And every single, 98% of his sources are all Wikipedia.
And we've debunked the debunkers a few times on here, haven't we? When people have tried to debunk your stuff. I mean, we will break it down and go through it. We're quite happy to do that if people show us where people have tried to debunk your work. Yeah. You know, this Holodomor, I mean, I believe there was an American journalist there that managed to get out, and they were the one that actually broke the story of what was going on. But this is the reason why Ukraine have got this thing against Russia. I mean, this is still playing out today. This is why Ukraine doesn't want to be a part of the Russian Federation, even though Russia is far more conservative and traditional than the EU, and being a part of the EU means they've got to have gay pride days, they're going to have to open themselves up to being invaded by the third world. They just don't trust Russia. They will never be able to trust Russia because of what happened. And they know that it wasn't the Russians. They know that it was the Jews that were running the USSR. 90% of the, of all the top posts in the USSR were manned by Jews. They know all of that. But, they cannot forgive Russia for it, it seems. They will continually be fighting against Russia, which is a really sad situation, because they're basically the same ethnicity. I think they've just got a slightly different language in Ukraine from Russia. But it wasn't it the Kievan Rus was the original Russians, and that's the Russians from Kiev. So, and mm-hmm. Ukraine means borderland. It was always sort of the borderlands of Russia. So it's the same people. It's very, very sad what's happening there. But the Holodomor is horrific.
Just bash a lot, more than thing.
Yeah, yeah. But this Holodomor, I mean, far more people were deliberately killed in it than, you know, the 6 million number of the Jews. 11 million people who guessed it at. Starved to death. There's
a clip on YouTube where they're actually saying to the Ukrainian government officials, one of the Holocaust guys, and he's saying, look, you know, we don't want your Holocaust to be overshadowing our Holocaust. And so they were stipulating plans. If they didn't follow, they wouldn't get the loans from the EU, which obviously they're in dire straits anyway. And you've got these loans with all this interest to pay back. And right at the end of this video, the wife of the guy talking, can't remember his name now, and somebody mentioned it's a bit harsh, really, wasn't it? Oh, he's always like that, yeah. He's, he likes to bring up the guilt. You know, we must keep this guilt on him. He said it all, really.
Oh, they don't want to have any competition for being the prime victims of suffering. I'm just being corrected in the chat room here. Okama says that the Ukrainians were the real Russians, and the Russians were called Muscovites. So there you go. That's what happened there. What was I going to get into then? Yeah, I was just going to looking at this here. The next part in this, he was talking about North Korea, saying that it was secretly a utopia. I mean, do people seriously think this? I mean, do these communist types, do they really believe that? I mean, they do seem to think that... They seem to think that communist crimes have been exaggerated, or that the USSR didn't get a chance to do real communism. And you think, well, if they're going to say that the USSR didn't get a chance to get it right, well, what about China? What about North Korea? What about Cambodia? Every country, Cuba, every country that has tried communism apparently didn't get it right then. All of them ended up killing loads of people.
Yeah. I think the root of the problem lies is you don't understand really what communism was. They do believe that it's a working class movement to better the working class and oust out the elite. Where it's the total opposite. It was invented by the elite to control the working class. Now, if they can't understand that, they go down this romantic road of, you know, gay Shavara and all the others, you know what I mean? So, and they've been indoctrinated with it.
Well, I think you can break it down to what they did. They tried to get the working classes to revolt and break down the infrastructure of the state so that they could take over, basically. And now that the proletariat and the workers have cottoned onto it and they don't want to do that, now they're trying to use the ethnic minorities. So they've told the blacks that they're being oppressed. They've told the Jews that they're being oppressed. They've told the Muslims that they're being oppressed. Rather, the Jews have done this.
Women.
They've told the Muslims and the gays and women and all these other minorities, and they're trying to use them to break everything down and cause chaos.
And I think you're right.
And it's always been the Jews that have run communism. And even in China, it was Jews that went over there and told them what it was that they should be doing. And when you think that the Talmud says that it should be the Jews ruling over the Goyim, that's exactly what communism was. It was Jews running everything.
And it's to rule the world as well. It's the only kind of political movement who wanted right from the off to rule the world.
And they just destroyed the country. I mean, they could have really made something out of the USSR. I mean, they're running it. They're at the top. I mean, really, it can't be that hard to run a business. You've got lots of, you know, people that want to work. And yet they just destroyed it all. Killed loads of people.
Well, they do that.
Ran the country into the ground. Yeah.
It is a bit like a virus, isn't it?
Yeah, it's... I mean, they're not able to really function for themselves in Israel, are they? They still have to get lots of foreign aid. They have to get other people to do everything. They do. They're not really capable of doing things for themselves. And when they try to get other people to do it, they just that's not the way to get people to work, threatening them to go to the gulags and banning them from having any knowledge. I mean, they had books that you couldn't read, and if you were caught reading one of these books, you'd be sent to the gulag. I mean, we say it's
they're short of the gulags now, Hollywood. You know, so a lot of these people probably don't even know what a gulag is.
I think there's a good bit in the documentary series where you showed them breaking rocks, and I thought that was
well. Really I did good. That as well with the transport of the Germans. You know, because when the Germans were shipped to the gulags, the NKVD actually said food is not our responsibility, and a lot of them trains took up to 8 to 12 weeks to get where they were going. So you can imagine the carriages inside them carriages. So when I first showed that footage, I intentionally showed that footage because I've never seen trains with Germans going to gulags on. It's the only time. And that was a powerful scene as it was. But like I said, it was only the other day I read about I downloaded a book called the Book of Black Communism. And in it describes it all and said the NKVD, food's got nothing to do with us.
Well, they didn't give them clothes either. I mean, they just fed them sort of grimy water and a bit of bread. Didn't give them clothes in the freezing cold of Siberia and told them that they had to build stuff there. They used them to build whatever it was that they built there and killed them off. And the idea wasn't to get this stuff built. It was just to make life as horrific as possible for these people.
Sure it was at all, yeah.
Just, you know, that the psychological impact of that as well, thinking, well, what's going on here? They really aren't even using me to get the most out of me. They're just trying to torture me to death. They're just trying to do the worst possible thing they can to me. How can other human beings do this to me? I mean, the horror. Well,
they weren't human, were they? They couldn't have been human. I mean, when you're cutting off genitals of 21-year-olds, you know,
Well, that's another point you bring up there. When the Soviets would come into a town with the Red Army and they'd rape. I mean, that was a big thing with the Bolsheviks as well. As soon as they took over in Russia, they would take over one of the aristocracy's houses and then they would have all the young women brought to them and they'd rape the women. A lot of the times they would kill them.
Gouge out eyes and all that. But, you know, animalistic behavior, I call it.
I think they gave out cards to entitle people that joined the Bolsheviks, entitling them to rape the women, and because the women were seen as the property, they were all public property. Because if there's no private property, if you don't own anything, and everybody belongs to everybody else, so even the people themselves were seen as that.
There's some great characters lining up with that one, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you'd have to be pretty simple not to work out what the pitfalls are with the idea of communism. I think this is why so many of these Antifa and the people that follow it, they're not the brightest of buttons, are they?
No, not the ones I've seen on YouTube.
But, I mean, this guy is obviously sort of, he's feeling like hope is lost with this. I mean, I don't tend to feel like that. I mean, you know, I look in our chat room and I see we've got bright people, well-educated people, you know, having conversations about all of this and learning stuff and wanting to be good people and from all over the world. And, you know, you just think to whoever this guy is, you know, he needs to make some nationalist friends that, and then he'll realize that, you know, there is an awakening going on all around the world, people waking up to nationalism, and all hope is not lost. You know, he may just be feeling like this with this circle of friends that he's got. Maybe he wants to, you know, drop a few more comments in places and talk to people. Maybe if he's at college, there's got to be some other people at college that think the same way as him. I mean, you can say these things, sort of question people how they feel about communism, ask the questions about it, point out what it is that's wrong with it. That's what I would suggest. I mean, don't make a name for himself and get himself into trouble at college. But surely
there must be some people. No, that could quite easily happen, couldn't it?
Yeah. There must be some there that aren't totally brainwashed. But I'm encouraged by young people. It seems to me that, you know, there's more young people that are awake to this than older people. There was a poll done a while back that said that the Gen Zs were the most conservative generation of all. And the majority of them supported Donald Trump. The majority of them had traditional views. They were going back to church. And this was a big poll that was done in America. As if it's turning back the other way, because the Generation Xers were all very hedonistic, and then the Millennials were all very sort of melancholy, didn't really know what's going on, and the Gen Zs are sort of bouncing back the other way, and they're sick of all this cultural Marxism, because they're the ones that have really been hit with it.
I try to say positive myself, but it is difficult at times. You know, sometimes you wish you never knew what was going on, but and obviously it's got to the sky, hasn't it? You know.
Well, we, you know, at Radio Aaron, we always try to have something positive to talk about, especially at the end of the podcast. we always try to cheer things up. I mean, you only have to really look around Europe. Yeah, just look at Italy, Matteo Salvini, and the Lega Nord, and what they're doing. They've managed to stop all the invasion into Italy. You look at Hungary. Look at Viktor Orban. And look at some of the things that he's saying about how Europe needs to be kept Christian, and Hungary needs to be kept for the Hungarians. Look at Austria with the Freedom Party. You know, look in France at the moment. Macron's got his lowest popularity rating of any president in France ever, and Marine Le Pen has got a higher rating than him in the polls. And we've got the European Union elections coming up next year in March, and the populist parties are winning everywhere. They're at the top in the polls.
Can I just ask you what's happening with Brexit? Because I haven't heard anything lately.
Well, Theresa May's just desperately going around the country, almost like she's on tour, talking to schools and radio stations and desperately trying to convince people that the only thing we can do is go along with her plan. And her plan is basically, we say we've left the EU, but we actually haven't. And we're actually in a worse situation than before, because we don't have any say in it. And then they've got this fake debate, which is supposed to be Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn. And what the point is of that, I just don't know, because they were both Remainers. Both Remainers. Yeah. Neither of them wanted to leave the EU. And they're both going to put on this pantomime debate on the BBC, as if to pretend.
So the point is, they're not going to leave then?
Well, I don't know. I think they're going to crash out with World Trade Organization terms, which I've been saying since day one they should leave on World Trade Organization terms, but I think that's what's going to happen anyway, and the whole of the last 2 years will have just been prevarication after prevarication while the EU plotted and planned for how it was going to cope with that. Whereas if we'd just done it straight away the next day, we'd have had them on the back foot. And instead, you know, they've got us on the back foot now. But I think that's
Iceland pulled out in no time. That's what I could never understand. All right, we're a big country in Iceland, but, you know, if Iceland could pull out in a couple of weeks, always found that strange.
Oh, we could do it straight away. And then we could make our own arrangements with each country that we wanted a trade deal with. I mean, it's not like people have never traded before without the EU. It's, we'll just have to see what happens anyway with that. We're supposed to be leaving in March, and they're going to have a vote on it in Parliament next week.
Yeah, well, they have to cover the democracy angle of it, because if they went for a second vote, which has been demanded for the last 2 years, you know, that would blow democracy wide open. I don't think they'll ever go for that.
No, I don't think they will. What they're trying to do is get everyone to go along with saying we've left when we haven't really. She says, this is the only deal we've got. We are leaving. This is Brexit. And you look at what she's actually done and, well, no, it isn't. We're still a part of the, you know, the core. Yeah, the transitionary period can be extended up until 2098. We don't have control over our fisheries. We don't have control over our borders. Northern Ireland is still going to be a part of the EU, so it's going to break the United Kingdom up. We're still going to be a part of the customs union, which is what, you know, leaving the EU meant leaving the customs union. That's what the EU is, a customs union. And she's saying, well, no, we'll stay within the customs union and we'll try to get even closer. But that's what Brexit is. It's crazy. It annoys me. It annoys me.
Yeah.
But that's what you get when you put a woman to do the negotiating, when women are the worst people at doing deals in the first place, and one who wanted to remain in the EU. It should have been somebody there right from the start
anyway, yeah.
Who wanted to leave, not someone who wanted to stay. Well, the next one we got here, we've got Chloe. She says, the facts do matter because Germany has been paying since World War II and has paid, I believe, over $80 billion to the Jews because of the 6 million figure. France, I believe, paid not that long ago because French trains were used to transport Jews. Also, the only thing you hear about is 6 million Jews and not the rest of the people who died. Also, you never hear of the Holodomor caused by Jews, where millions were purposely starved to death. Germany has suffered greatly because of this lie and still feels the guilt today, even though most were not born during World War II. Facts do matter. Facts should be truth and not lies. And I believe she's referring to somebody called Stefan who is saying silly things. So what's she on about there?
Stefan Molyneux. Well, he's one of these people. He's kind of a truther. He's pretty popular on the internet. And somebody phoned in, actually, just out of the blue. He has these phone calls every now and again. Somebody's seen the greatest story ever told. And went on to explain to him that what he'd seen looked pretty convincing and is starting to get a bit of a shock system going because he's starting to believe that this is actually plausible. And he hadn't seen it, this Stefan Molyneux, so he asked for a little bit more detail and then he went on to talk about the Holocaust and things like that, and he gave his opinion of Holocaust deniers and the guy eventually wasn't the most, you know, tougher sounding guy like, but in the end, you know, he kind of went along with it. But it was quite obvious to anybody else listening that at one point he said, facts don't matter. I mean, who, you know, I don't really give a damn if he killed 6 million and he killed, 100. It was still wrong. So he was going off them things. And when he said that, facts don't matter, then the comment section blew up, you know, because, obviously facts matter.
Well, facts matter a lot. I think Stefan Molyneux, he sort of toned everything down a bit so that he can stay on YouTube. I mean, he compromises the message. He does compromise the message so that he can continue doing what he's doing. And he's also said before that he's Jewish. He does serve a purpose in that, you know, he sort of brings people, when people are first, you know, sort of putting their foot in the water and feeling the temperature a bit, you know, they'll listen to Stefan Molyneux, and then once they've got used to him, they'll sort of hunger for a bit more, and, you know, then they'll find someone like Jared Taylor, and, you know, eventually they'll come across us, and they'll come across you, Dennis. But he seems to be one of the people, the first stepping stones on the way, I would say. Which sort of brings me to this.
Yeah, I think that's pretty true.
Sort of brings me to this one. Anon a Mouse says, Dennis, I have an honest question. How do we, especially us younger people, find any sort of hope? Every single European identity movement that springs up is entirely operated by Khazars or their Masonic foot soldiers. The Catholic Church is totally infiltrated by Masons, and through my own personal research, I've concluded that the Protestants were simply part of the European Spring in the 17th century, the European Socialist Revolution, the Enlightenment. On the other hand, you have the groups who want to resurrect pre-Christian heathen views. But even those groups are all these alt-righters and other degenerates who listen to things like National Socialist black metal and don't even read the history of the pre-Christian European ways. Then when it comes to politics, even all these identity groups and heroes like TRS, Lauren Southern and others always low-key promote Israel. Plus the so-called Natsoc allied people have never even read Mein Kampf. I have never met one. It's always, well, I started to read it, but then stopped. So, number one, the Catholic Church is destroyed. Number two, our political movements simply get co-opted by Khazars and Masons. Number three, they slander us normal average people with image association through black metal, skinheads, siege culture, and other degenerate trash. Number four, and now they are trying to make us Europeans all fall in love with Russian identity. I'm not the only young person who sees this and feels totally helpless. We don't even have spirituality anymore to at least save us. What do we do? What a great comment. That's a really good comment, that.
Well, yeah, again, he's quite right, and it is the effect of losing World War II, apparently. What can you say to you know, other than divine intervention at this point, is all I can offer him?
Well, I think, I mean, what he's showing there just by writing that is that, you know, they're a good person. They're thinking about this. They're analysing all of this.
Sure, yeah.
I don't know if he's male or if they're female. I mean, what I would say is with these groups, with these European identity groups that, you know, may have Jews in there or they may have Masons in there. Unfortunately, if you want to have a popular political group now, that just seems to be what they have to do. They have to not be anti-Israel. I can't think of any of these groups that have actually got anywhere that speak out against the Jews. That they just seem to have to toe the line like that. But that doesn't mean that they're all bad, especially if they're trying to stop immigration or if they're trying to stop Islamization. I mean, you could go in there, join these groups or help these groups out. And I'm sure if you're talking to the people, the other members that are there, you'll find that some of them are Jew-wise or know what happened in World War II. Or if they don't, then you can tell them about it. You can wake them up to it. And if you want to listen to positive stuff with people that are awake, then listen to Radio Aryan. We don't have anything degenerate on here. I mean, we will play some National Socialist black metal on our music show, but that's because we play all nationalist music on the music show. But we try to set a good example. And there are nationalist groups that try to set a good example. I believe Generation Identity, you know, they're very into the way that they look to the public. I mean, we did have the London Forum. That was, you know, that was very intellectual. Again, that was people that wanted to present a good image to the public. Radio Aryan, we've got a thing challenging the stereotypes, and I think that's what we've got to do. We've got to challenge the stereotypes that the media put out about us. And, you know, this person that wrote this comment, they sound like somebody who's doing that. Just by being somebody that questions these things, thinks about these things, you know, speaks about these things, you are helping to change the stereotypes that people have, and you're helping just by pointing this out. So don't feel helpless about it. Just know that you have a whole nationalist community here that is right behind you. And, you know, we have quite a plurality of views and we have a lot of discussion. Just take part in that discussion. And if you can do something locally to help out with the nationalist group that you've got, go and help them out. Or if you're only able to do it online, then help out online and study and try and find out more about it yourself. And try and pick the right partner, pick a good nationalist partner and produce lots of children. Or if that's not for you, then get heavily involved in the activism and devote your life to the 14 words. And just by doing that, by doing the activism, you will you'll feel good about yourself. You'll feel content. You'll feel like you've done something to help. So the means becomes the end as well. So, you know, the end is we want to have more white children. So if you're doing that, you know, by actually doing that, you're helping us out by producing more children. Or if you're taking part in activism, you're helping us out. So the means and become a part of the end itself, if you see what I mean. So that's
well, there's always that, I think. Come with the error, come with the man. Who knows? Hitler came along, they all wanted a messiah. Hitler came along, so things can change, you know.
Well, we should be trying to be the best people that we can, so that if say a party does come that's an ethno-nationalist party, then you know we want to be in a position where we can either help donate to that party or put ourselves forward as a candidate for that party, or say, look, you know, we're good at doing multimedia, help. Can we do that? Or we're good at doing propaganda. So just trying to be the best at whatever your trade is, whatever your skills are, work on those skills and then offer them to nationalist organizations or other nationalists and help put those skills towards the benefit of your nation and your race.
Yeah, I think another one of the most important things these days is to try and wake people up. The more people that's awake, the better chance we have, I think.
Yeah, put your skills towards doing that. Show people the greatest story never told. Buy a DVD of it so you can show it to people, or buy a DVD for somebody else for Christmas, or just download it and show it to people. Talk to people about these things. Try to make them aware that we've been lied to, and we need to have some serious changes. And that in itself is a big help. I think just knowing this stuff. Well, once you know this stuff, it sort of comes out in whatever you do anyway. Whoever you talk to, you'll always have that sort of nationalist angle to whatever it is you're talking about.
Yeah, well, look at me. I'm a sort of an immigrant, and I'm fighting all I can to let the British people know what's happening.
Well, that's it. Well, the next one's Dom from Mel B. And he says, why did the Scots get involved in the Spanish Revolution? I mean, Scotland's miles away from Spain. So what was going on there, Dennis?
Well, I did a piece on the Spanish Revolution, and apparently there was, out of all the minorities who went over, there, Scotch. The Scottish had the biggest minority group over there. And the reason for that, really, is that it's always had socialism. At the heart in Scotland. Even the football managers, Alex Ferguson and Bill Shankly, they've always been real staunch socialists. I think that comes from the mines up there. You know, they used to have the mining industry. But again, it's this theory about socialism and communism being for the working man, which really is never going to materialise because it just doesn't exist. Yes, so Scots got killed over there.
I say there's still communists today. I just thought about something else on that last issue that we were talking about. You know, the truth will set you free. That's what Christ said. Yeah. The truth will set you free. So just knowing this truth, you know, will be of benefit to you, even if it's a shock at first. So long as you hold to it and you don't pretend that it isn't there or that you don't know about it, it will improve your life. It will improve your life and it will set you free. So just think about that one. The truth will set you free, even if it hurts at first. The next one that we've got here says, hey, Dennis, we've been running into a number of these things recently. Can you help with interpreting and dissecting this video of Hitler? Is he making Masonic hand signals? As the only honest-looking or speaking politician we have ever seen, these things pop up occasionally, and the majority are clearly nothing, but the oath and a couple of clips have been somewhat confusing. You seem like one of the only people in the world who might be able to shed light on this with actual knowledge instead of rumour. And they've got a video where Hitler is just sort of putting his hands together, really. Yeah.
Yeah. Not only that, the guy who's commented on it, certainly the opening commentary, and he comes in again later on, he has a... On his channel, he has a playlist called Dennis Wise's Lies. So, what it is, like, he tends to tell everybody that the Nazis were the Templars and they were in Switzerland, and that's the reason they didn't invade Switzerland, and everything up to the present day is all Nazis and Templars. And some people have been convinced by him. I went on, listened to one video of his, in that section, believe it or not, Dave Wise Lies, and after 4 minutes I had to comment, tell him where he'd gone wrong. But yeah, so when she mentioned it, as soon as I heard his voice, I thought, oh no, not again. And it's just a simple, I mean, a million people would have put their hands in that position today alone.
That's the thing, isn't it? Some people, they go a little bit overboard with the conspiracies, and they see conspiracies everywhere. And just about any hand position or position of the body, they'll say, oh, that's it. That's a Masonic signal. And a lot of the time it isn't. It's just that they're particularly looking for them. That's what it is. If you're looking for something.
Well, I mean, if you were stood, like Merkel was, for instance, you were stood, the only way she could put her hands were more or less like that. If you understand what I mean. I mean, she could have them down her side, but, you know, to express yourself sometimes, you use your hands, and that's a comfortable position to be in. So, but it does surprise me, this guy really doesn't.
Well, we've got a quote to finish on today for your favourite
like
character.
This, yeah.
Yeah, John Amory. This is John Amory, and this is a proclamation from John Amory to all the British subjects interned at home. So where was John Amory when he said this? Was he in Germany or something?
Well, he must have been abroad, but at some point I think he does mention that some have escaped England, which means, you know, England has become a prison.
Well, this is what he has to say. 150,000 of our fellow countrymen are in prison in the home country, because they have declared themselves against this fratricidal war in violation of the Habeas Corpus Act and the fundamental laws of our Constitution. These men have never been brought to trial or even been allowed to see a lawyer. American troops have not only occupied Ulster, but are arriving in increasing numbers in England. Naval bases and colonies have been handed over to Mr. Roosevelt's administration. Europe and our country, your wives and children at home, are menaced by the invasion of the hordes of Bolshevik barbarity. For this reason, I have approached the German government with a proposal to form a British Legion against Bolshevism, to be known as the Legion of St. George. I appeal to all Britishers to answer this call to arms for the defence of all the principles that we Englishmen have been the first to proclaim in the world. The St. George Legion will fight only against the communists and on no other front. All men will commence in their present rank, and promotion will be open to all men alike, without any distinction or qualifications, political or otherwise. Within the limits of the military possibilities, the Legion of St. George will fight at the junction of the German-Finnish front, besides the troops of the undaunted, liberty-loving Finnish people. Hundreds of soldiers have volunteered to join this legion. Men who have escaped from England have come to join us. 3 Royal Air Force aeroplanes have come over to us so far with their arms and equipment. It is up to you civilians to give a hand to show that we intend to take our responsibilities to maintain the integrity of our empire by giving the world proof that we have not all sold out to the Jew or the plutocrat. Yeah, that's a great quote there. I don't think I've heard that one before, yeah. Dennis.
No, it's, you know what I think of the guy. So I thought we'd include that tonight, but you managed to get it in.
Yeah.
Walking like a true patriot.
Brilliant, brilliant. That must have been encouragement to the people in Britain, and I guess also prisoners of war in Germany, if they wanted to join this legion and fight against the communists. It just shows you that's what National Socialism was about fighting the communists and protecting Europe from them, basically, on the Eastern Front. I've got one final quote to finish with. Yeah, I've got one final quote to finish with. Again, it's John Amory. He says, it came as a great shock to me when I heard that England and Soviet Russia had become allies, so much so that I thought that the people responsible in London were acting in a manner that no longer coincided with British imperial interests. And I think that shows you that the guy wasn't a traitor. I mean, he was loyal to Britain.
I from it, yeah.
But he was hanged as a traitor.
He was.
He was an honourable man. Okay, Dennis, that finishes us up tonight, I think. Thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next week with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you have a great weekend.